This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a 1% for the planet member who believes personal health and health of the environment are connected. If you spend as much time outside as we do, which we hope you do, or really any time outside at all for that matter, you're bound to have kids that get nicked, scraped, or banged up, or perhaps come in from outside with an unexplained rash, or maybe you end up on the wrong side of a fall or a bad scrape yourself. That's why we love Active Skin Repair. Active Skin Repair is an all-natural and non-toxic topical solution that is formulated to help repair and heal damaged skin. It can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, including cuts, scrapes, but also burns, sunburns, rashes, and other types of skin damage. It works by mimicking the natural immune response to help soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support healing. It's also safe and non-toxic, making it suitable for use on all skin types, including sensitive skin. It's really easy to add to your first aid kit. As if all of that wasn't amazing enough, Active Skin Repair donates 1% of all sales to grassroots environmental initiatives to protect and restore our national world, which is super cool. Visit ActiveSkinRepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and their commitment to 1% for the planet. You can use code 1000hours to save 20% on all Active Skin Repair products. That's ActiveSkinRepair.com. And we're off. Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Ginny Erich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside. And so excited. Joining us today is Stephen Miller. Welcome.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. Like, love you guys so much. So, a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome. You guys are, you got this YouTube channel that, the Miller fam, and you've got these vlogs. I watch some of them and it's so neat. It's so neat how you're just sharing your life with people, and you and your wife, you're sitting on the couch and you're talking through different things, and you're splicing in these pictures and videos, and you have a unique story. You have 7 kids. Several of them are adopted.
Yes.
And so can you just tell us a little bit about your family dynamic? There's a lot of kids, people would say, but very exciting, and you're showcasing a lot of what you're doing online.
Yeah. So my wife and I were high school sweethearts. Prom was our first date. And very young, we got married, started having kiddos, and had our first kid like right out of high school, got married at 17 and 19. I guess I had just turned 20. She was like less than a month away from turning 18. But in Texas, that's totally legal. So no hate. we started having our first two kiddos there in Texas, and felt really strongly called to adopt. And so we started the process to adopt from Ethiopia. We have 2 sons from Ethiopia that we adopted in 2011, and they're amazing young men. And, they're all older now, like they're 17 and 15, about to turn 16, and working at Chick-fil-A. And,
are they going to get married at 17?
We'll see.
Doesn't it seem so much younger when you're the parent and they're 17?
I know. Wait a minute. Yeah. My oldest is 20. I'm like, you're the age that I was when we had you, that's crazy. So, and then we had had a few miscarriages in 2012. My wife, through that process, it was pretty heartbreaking, found out that she has a very rare genetic, mutation called MTHFR. And that was what was causing the miscarriages. And so, she started kind of taking some treatments for that. And we got pregnant with Ethan. Who is sort of our miracle rainbow baby. And he's amazing. And we had him a little bit, and my wife was like, hey, am I crazy that I feel like we're supposed to adopt? And again, right? And I said, no, you're an amazing mom. And we come from a Christian faith background. And to us, like, what the Bible says is that God is the father to the fatherless, and he puts orphans in homes. And so we know this is something that he cares a lot about. He says that this is true Christianity, that you care for orphans. And so we're like, okay, like, that's what we know about God's heart. We know that this is our heart as a family, as parents. We've got room for one more in the suburban, and let's go, So we started the process to adopt in 2016, basically. And about midway through that process, we're going to adopt this little girl, Penelope, who was 12 at the time. And my wife said, hey, I think we're supposed to adopt again. 2 at the same time. And I was like, come again? I'm not really hearing that, babe. Like, let's pray about that a little bit, And so we did. And I said, I basically, after a couple of weeks of praying, really didn't feel like any yes or no, right? Mm-hmm. So I just said, here's what we're going to do. We're asking God to bless it if it's his plan and to stop us if it's not. So we'll go to the adoption agency and we'll say, hey, we'd like to adopt these two kids concurrently. Can we do that? If they say yes, China will have to say yes. And China's probably not going to say yes. So if the agency and China both say, you're adopting these two kiddos at the same time, like, then we know it's the Lord and we'll go for it, you know? Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, we took all these, like, are you crazy tests, and somehow we passed. And like, we were off to the races because they both said yes. So we brought those kiddos home August of 2017. And now we have a large family of nine with four adopted kiddos, two from Ethiopia, two from China, three biological. And it's just, there's never a dull moment, you know? It's like,
yeah. Oh, sure. And people can follow that on your YouTube channel and on social media too. And then you wrote a book.
Yeah.
You wrote a book. And what's interesting about the book is that you look at your life in it, you know, from the outset, it's like, oh, these people have really got it going. We got it going on. You got this large family, you're living life. It's exciting. But your book is about getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Which was surprising to me that that is what the book is about.
Well, if you knew me, that would not be surprising.
Well, then I read it and I was like, okay, all right, I see.
Okay, makes sense.
Yeah. But I loved the premise of it. And I think that as parents, and you know, you're trying to get it right. That's really the whole point, is you're so striving to get it right. We're trying to get it right, trying to get our kids outside, trying to keep them off screens. But the book is called The Art of Getting It Wrong, Finding Good in the Misadventures of Life. And I felt it was like, it like let my soul relax. Mm. And you have these big premises in here that failure isn't final, which is so true. Like when you really think about it, it's like, well, who of us have been ended by failure? We've all failed at stuff. Mm-hmm. None of us have been ended our situation. You aren't your mistakes and your failures don't define you, but they can refine you. So it's a lot here to cling to, a lot of hope to cling to, because parenting is really tricky and there's going to be a lot of failure just in our work and in the things that we do. So one of the pieces comes from, though, your childhood, which I thought we should talk about. Okay. We haven't talked about this too much. Do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, let's do it.
You had a lot of bullying in your childhood. It was like the sticks and stones, you know, there's always been that saying, it's not true. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. And you say words might jack me up forever. This is a big part of your story. People were mean, and we're dealing with that with our own kids. And how do you deal with it? And so often it lasts for a very long time. Tell us about when you were a kid.
Yeah, I mean, so we grew up really poor. Neither of my parents really had a job at the same time until I think I was a freshman in high school, and they both took teaching jobs for about 6 months, and then they got divorced pretty quickly after that. So it was like a pretty rough from that standpoint. But I was the obese kid growing up, and you know, in high school I was 300 pounds and 5 foot three, and didn't have a growth spurt until way later. And my voice stayed very, very high, you know, until like my senior year in high school, when, you know, Blockbuster Video would call and say, your video is late, bring it back. And I'd be like, okay. And they'd say, okay, ma'am. And I'd be like, I'm a boy, you know, like it was just kind of, there was a lot there, right? You go to the pool and people ask if you're a girl or a boy, you know, all that stuff. Yeah. But it really did get brutal there for a while. The funny thing is, all these kids with their bullying and rocks, like literally throwing rocks and punching me in the head and all kinds of just crazy stuff because you're fat, like not exactly awesome, but I built up this defense mechanism of being sarcastic and snarky and funny and in a defense to guard myself from the words being spoken to me. I kind of became this guy who had pretty sharp words myself, you know, and that tends to work against me sometimes. Even now I'm 40, you know, and I'm still the whole sticks and stones may break my bones, but words might jack me up forever. It's like, yeah, I can still hear some of those words when I look in the mirror or whenever I'm at the gym or whenever I'm sitting down to eat a meal and I'm trying to convince myself, like, you know, don't do it, fatty, you know, or whatever, you know, it's tough. And at the same time, whenever I look in the mirror, the way that I speak to myself, you know, how do my kids receive that? You know, they're sort of like little mini-me's. If I'm talking badly about the way I look, what does that say about them? And if I'm talking that way about how to eat or not eat or work out or not work out, how do they feel about that? What's their self-image whenever they see themselves in me and the way I talk to myself? So there's a lot of that too. It's a source of strife for me.
It's a lot. It manifested. What was interesting to me about it, Stephen, and you wrote about it quite a bit, and there was a lot of different facets to it. And what drew me into that story was that bullying, and especially online bullying, has really gone up.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that sometimes feels like it's kind of out there. Like, we're talking about bullying. I talked to this man named Kim John Payne, who came on and talked about, he has this phenomenal book called Emotionally Resilient Teens and Tweens, and how do you navigate that with your child? We've actually really drawn a lot from that book. Like, how do you, and he goes through every different type of bullying. So bullying includes these taunting words. A bullying also includes being excluded. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of ways bullying, there's online bullying. There's a lot of ways that it shows up. And what I got from your story, Stephen, and I'm so glad that you shared it, is this is the why. This is the why it's really important that we are on guard for these things, because it manifested in your life in a lot of ways. So here you say, look, I'm 40, I'm still like working with my words. I'm still sometimes hearing these taunts that I heard when I was younger. But one of the things you also said, well, there was two other things. One of the things was it pushed you to this, to be this person that's trying to prove yourself a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you wanted to be the famous worship pastor, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah, it's hilarious, right? Like, just doesn't even make sense. Yeah, I think, the defensiveness thing, right? And then also just the, I'll show them, you know, and the, you know, whether that's like in a normal conversation with my wife, and she's saying something to me that is helpful and would be, that I should receive with gladness, because I know that she's my helpmate and she's really, part of her goal as my wife is to make me the best version of me that she can. And I get defensive and think, well, you know, that's not whatever, blah, 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 right? So that can be a position of strife there, but it also can become this, I've got to work to prove to show that like I'm worthy, that I'm not that fat kid, that I'm not that poor kid, that I'm not that, you know, whatever kid. Like I want to be the best singer. I want to be the best author. I want to be the best YouTuber. I want to be the best whatever. And now I'm doing real estate, you know, like I want to be the best realtor in Nashville, right? Like I want to do these things that show that I'm not that.
Let's make you that. Where can people find your stuff if they want to move to Nashville? Yeah. Because, you know, everybody wants to move to Nashville. So where are they going to find you there?
It is true. Yeah. So yeah, you can just find me on Instagram at Stephen Miller. That's Stephen with a PH, not a V. Funny enough, my mom, she spelled my name with a PH, like the first martyr. And people always would call me Steve, you know, and she'd say, I didn't spell your name with a V, so people couldn't call you Steve. And now she's married to a Steve, which is kind of funny.
Because it would be like Steph.
Yeah, Steph, Steph Curry. Right. I would take that.
Stephen Miller with a PH. Is going to be the best realtor in Nashville. You want to move there because it's amazing. We love to come to Tennessee.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, you're a workaholic, wanting to show that I was worthy. This is a lot to take into your adulthood from your childhood.
Yeah. And in some ways, I'm like grateful, right? Like all of our stories make us who we are. Mm-hmm. Like if I didn't have the drive to succeed, right? Apart from God's gracious hand of kindness and provision, which is where it all comes from anyway, like I don't know that I would be successful the way that I have been able to be successful in the areas and the ways that I have been. And yet here I am like, hey, dad, can you stop working for a little bit so we can go do something together? Right.
Yeah. The wording. Yeah. And people are saying to you, you're trying too hard. I mean, they're literally saying this is too much. Yeah. Like you're calling, there was a story with this guy, Ben, and you're trying to get this thing and you're just calling and calling and calling. They're like, stop. Like you like back off a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
I spent decades working to reverse the childhood wounds of bullying. I just really want to bring it up because this is the story of like what I think sometimes we gloss over it. In a lot of ways, we don't even know what's happening because a lot of it's online. Mm-hmm. So for our own kids to not be that way, and if it is happening to deal, I spent decades working to reverse the childhood wounds of bullying, rejection, poverty, and abandonment that I somehow internalized to mean I was worthless. And there was another piece there that beyond this working too hard, trying too hard, was that you're struggling to be present
Yeah, exactly.
Now, how did that affect just your day to day of being in the moment?
Well, you know, I think in different phases of your kids' lives and in and of your spouse and of your marriage, right? There's an evolution there and it shows up differently throughout the years. So whenever my kids were really young, they didn't really know how to verbalize like, hey, dad, you're always working. So there's this story. I was like working so hard that I didn't even notice that I had quite a bit of butt crack showing, right? and I'm like sitting on the ground. This is a kind of a funny story. I'm sitting on the ground. I'm like pouring over these papers, trying to send out all these press kits with albums and whatever. And my oldest daughter just comes up and she sees the opportunity and just sticks her hand right there in the butt crack. And I was like, whoa, you know, and she thought it was hilarious. And my wife thought it was hilarious. And I thought it was hilarious. But the idea is like, what is that kid? What's going through that kid's mind? Maybe it's just, oh, there's a butt crack. But maybe it's like, hey, I want dad to play with me. I'm trying to get his attention, you know? And now it's like, we always say, it's like, I want to give my children the dignity of my eyes, not just the top of my head while I'm staring down at a phone screen, right? And so there's a lot of discipline that comes with that. And it's the addictive nature of that glowing little rectangle in your hand anyway. And we're all like susceptible to it, no matter what. But for me, so much of that kind of still stems back into I need to post because I've got to show people that I'm doing something awesome, or I need to post because if I don't, people will forget that I'm
awesome.
You know, I'm the best realtor in Nashville, or I'm the best, whatever, you know, awesome. Yeah. Forget that I'm awesome. Right.
Yeah. Oh, and that I'm not the fat kid anymore.
Right.
That everyone was bullying. Yeah. I need to prove, subconsciously driven by a need to prove that I'm not the fat kid everyone bullied growing up. There's a lot to think about there. And I was really glad that you wrote about it. I think that's pretty vulnerable. You know, you say, you even talked about getting picked last for the team, and that's an awful, I mean, I wasn't athletic. I didn't care. I don't really care about sports. It's even if you're a boy, I think, and you're growing up and you're the last one and everyone groans. You said, this is a huge statement, Stephen. I was just a dead weight. Yeah. No one wanted.
Yeah.
That's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard. And those things last.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how do I shape myself to never feel that again? Right. Like that's a tough deal because at the end of the day, what's true about me is none of those things. What's true about me is that I am created in the image of God, and that from a position of faith, right? I believe that Jesus saved me at the cost of his own life. He gave himself for me, and then he gave me an eternal hope, an eternal future, a better identity that I could ever earn or lose for myself. And that's a big deal, right? And whether or not you subscribe to that or not, what's true is that like, you're not the words that were spoken to you. Like there is a better identity for you than that. And whether you believe that or not about Jesus and God and faith and whatever, there is something inherently beautiful about humanity that we're not reduced to these stupid little words that get thrown around so flippantly.
Yes. 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 And New York, you came from a broken home and poverty too. So I think, you know, these are big things that if we're having to guide our children through, it actually really matters a lot. If we can do, I mean, that book I said has really got some great ideas, but also just to be aware of what's going on.
We love bread in our house. I mean, who doesn't? PB&J's, turkey sandwiches, even just morning toast with butter. It's all good in our home. We're always on the hunt for a healthy alternative. That's why our family loves Hero Bread. It is delicious. They make delicious bread and products free of consequences or compromise. They've made carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. We love the classic white bread and the seeded bread, which are both made with olive oil and have a wonderful, rich taste to them. I was so surprised how soft both types of bread were. They were just the right blend of chewiness and sturdiness for making sandwiches. This bread is a favorite in our house for sure. The tortillas were also delicious, and we loved making simple cheese quesadillas as a snack. We're talking 0 net carbs, high in fiber, 0 grams of sugar. What more could you ask for? Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code OUTSIDE at checkout. That's code OUTSIDE at hero.co. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. In springtime, allergies can sometimes be my kryptonite. When my nose is plugged up and my eyes are watering, I feel like I struggle more to do the things I really enjoy. Making dinner, heading outside to get my sunlight before noon, and even hosting the show can be a bit more challenging. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medication and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for several years, and it's been an absolute life changer. My eyes aren't a constant, itchy, drippy faucet, my nose isn't running, and I can speak without feeling like something has jumped in my throat. And I love that Claritin D tackles nasal congestion caused by allergies or cold, and also relieves sinus congestion and pressure due to allergies. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Use as directed.
Well, and then you said your story is filled with a lot of like ups, like it's like ups and then here it goes. So you even just said one that wasn't in the book, which was that you're struggling and childhood is filled with poverty. You're putting food on the table. You're a kid. You're working. Your money's going to put food on the table. All of a sudden now both of your parents get a job. They're, you know, you're got a family. Now they're both working. This is great. And then they get divorced. So you had a couple stories in here that were similar to that. The bike story.
Yeah.
Both times I was not expecting. Yeah. And then the cell phone story that, you know, it's like this high. And then it was like, oh, and it happened fairly quickly. Can you tell us?
Yeah.
You want to pick one and tell us one of the two?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so both are kind of like, it's the lessons. That's sort of the whole idea of the book. The art of getting it wrong is how do you metabolize these things that are happening, not against you or happening to you, but happening for you. And so, you know, if you believe that there is a creator who's ordaining and working together things for your good, then you know that nothing's really happening to you. It's happening for you. It's happening to shape you. It's happening to build you. It's happening to make you a better version, the best that you can be. If you can truly look at these things that happen as what can I learn from this? How can I use this as fuel to grow and to, you know, to do that? And so the bike story, you know, there's a story to that, right? Like so the idea with that was like, I moved too fast, like just slow down a little bit, right? I would say that the cell phone story for me is the most, I still think about that today, like from the standpoint of just the words. So my mentor, Jim, who's passed away since, he had bone cancer in his hip and died a few years back. It was one of the most heartbreaking losses that I've had in my life because he was very much like a dad to me. He believed in me. He funded so much of my ministry. He paid for my albums. He bought us a trailer for our band to be able to drive around and play. He was just that guy that just, I believe in you, Stephen. I'm proud of you, Stephen. And he just poured into me so, so much. And I needed that so bad as a young man. Well, in 2008, he bought me an iPhone, the first iPhone. I don't think it was the first iPhone. I think it was the next year the iPhone was out. So it wasn't the original iPhone, it was the next model. And he just said, Stephen, I believe in you. You know, I want you to have this. This is going to help you grow your ministry. This is going to help you, you know, achieve the things that God's put in your heart and pursue these dreams. And so I want you to have this. So for my birthday, he got me this iPhone. Well, one day I was just like grabbing some gas and I would sit my phone underneath my leg in the car. And I was getting out to get gas and it fell to the ground and shattered the screen. And I was like, oh no. And this is like, there's not Apple stores like anywhere, right? And so I had to wait like a week and a half to find. Yeah. And so I get to the place and I'm like, hey, I'd like to get this fixed. Can you fix it? And they're like, yeah, it would be $200. I think that was $200. And I was like, $200? You know, I think I paid for that for the phone. You know, you're going to. And so they're like, well, you could get a new phone for $899, something like that. And I was like, what do you mean $899? So I said, I bought the insurance though, right? Like I bought the insurance, so that should cover it. And it doesn't cover cracked screens. It covers more just like damage to the phone. So I'm like, okay, cool. So I got this. Okay. So I take the phone and I go up to the top of the highest staircase I can find. And I just start chunking the phone down off the stairs over and over again until it breaks. Well, it broke pretty good. So I had to put it in a bag and I just come into the back into the store and I dropped the bag off. I said, is this broken enough for insurance to cover it? And the guy's like, you freaking idiot. And he says, no, we don't. That's like utter destruction. We can't even fix that, you know? And so they wanted me to pay the $900 for the new phone. Well, on the thing next to me, like next to the, like I look past the sales guy's shoulder and there's a sign that says free iPhone with the new phone line. So I'm like, all right, cool. So I go in and I just sign up for a new phone line and I get the new iPhone and I'm pretty proud of myself. I think I'm doing all right, you know? And I go to Jim, who bought me the original iPhone, and I told him the story, and he just said, you knucklehead, you don't trade your integrity for a new phone. You know, mm-hmm. you don't trade your character for a new whatever. Like you've got to learn that. Like it's nothing is worth your character. Nothing is worth your integrity. Like you've got to rein that in, because if you don't, if you can't trust in the small things like a cracked screen, if you can't be trusted with that, how do you feel like God's going to trust you with more? How do you think? And that's proven true. And there are times in my life where I'm so tempted to take a shortcut or to just bend the rules a little bit, right? And I don't do this perfectly. I do take shortcuts and bend the rules, you know, like I think a lot of us do. And every single time I can hear that voice, it's like, it's not worth your character. It's not worth your integrity.
Yeah.
Don't trade it. It's not worth the trade. Mm-hmm. And every time I do make the trade, I come to find out, oh yeah, that was not worth the trade.
Well, because this one was quite expensive, because when you took that contract out to its full extent of the 2 years, it was a lot more than the phone would have cost.
It turned out to be more. Yeah. I mean, you're paying it over the little bits of, you know, you're kind of like, oh yeah, I'm getting one over on the system. And they kind of know that, right? They know like, no, you're going to pay this. Yeah. Don't worry.
Yeah. But that up and the down where you say he'd been so kind and generous to me.
Yeah.
And then I squandered it like a hot-headed idiot.
Yeah.
You say, and I like this sentence, it would be easy, because really this book is filled with a lot of these where you're like, you know, you're reading the story and you're like, oh, if he just would have fixed the water leak, or, you know, like at the right time, talking about procrastination and
yeah,
the cell phone, the bike story is great. I mean, it's really incredible. You know, you're working hard to get a bike. You give your money to your family to put food on the table. And there's a sweet woman who knows. And so she pays you extra the next time so you can get your bike. I thought it's like, oh, this is the most beautiful story.
Yeah.
And then you wrecked the bike.
Right
away.
She was the sweetest lady. I still think of, she had a little pug, like a little pug dog. And she would always, when I was, you know, mowing her yard or raking her yard, she had these orange dreamsicles. And you know how the orange dreamsicles would have the two dreamsicles? Mm-hmm. So she'd break one off, give me one, give the other one to the little dog. And I was like, I love working for you, you know?
What a lady. And so I mean, sweet. She knew. So she gave you the money for the bike and then you crashed it. And I think, and I don't know, it's interesting to write a book like this. I mean, it's pretty vulnerable. You're like, I messed this up and I messed this up. And then, I mean, it was just one thing after the next.
Yeah.
And you say, it would be easy to let those moments haunt me rather than teach me.
Yeah.
And what's really neat, Stephen, is that you go through story after story and you're like, well, this one teaches me not to procrastinate. This one teaches me to slow down a little bit. They all teach you all of these different things. I think it's a big statement to say they could haunt, because, I mean, even just reading them, I felt a little bit like, oh, gosh, I mean, that's really hard. But they all point to this: failure isn't final.
Yeah.
Every single one. It ladders back to you are not your mistakes.
Yep.
They all add her back to that, because here you are, most popular realtor in Nashville, famous Christian worship leader, and all of the things that you wanted still happen. Can you talk to us about the Adam and Eve story?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So we'll get to, so here's what I'll say too.
Yeah.
Like I wrote this because I see in my kids and in their friends and sort of their generation, a fear of failing.
Mm.
It just kind of freezes you in your tracks.
Yeah.
And so you don't really want to try new things because you're afraid of what will happen if you get it wrong, of what will happen if you fail. People are going to make fun of me. I'm never going to be able to recover from this, right? There's all this. And so I write these things to say, look, I've kind of done everything that you could do to get it wrong, and I'm still going, you know? Yeah. And then conversely, like, I'm part of a generation that's getting to that age that they're looking at their lives and they're saying, this is it. Like, where did I go wrong? Like, what happened? And so you've got the midlife crises, and you've got the whatever, you've got just the sense of disillusionment with life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I say that to say, like, you're not done. Like, the story's not over. There's more yet to be written. Mm-hmm. So that to say, I don't have it figured out at all. Like, I'm writing this as a work in progress. Right. Case in point, I've never had it figured out. And when I was dating Amanda,
I almost wonder if we should save it. I think we should save it. People should read the book.
Okay.
They have to read the book. The Adam and Eve story. I was laughing so hard. So we're saving it.
It comes up every couple days or so around our house, for sure.
The book is The Art of Getting It Wrong, and you got to get it. You got to read this Adam and Eve story. It's just story after story. We feel like a little cringe for you, but then also it's neat to see that your life is public in a lot of ways. So you're like, well, they got a really cool thing going on. You know, they got a really cool life over there. And these things, while they may be derailed for the moment, and some of them are costly financially, they did not derail your entire life. I thought there was a really beautiful story about this older couple that really stood out to me. You were talking about being somewhere and waiting for food. And sometimes we're in a rush. We're so in our own thing. Yeah. We're in a rush, and these people are, you know, supposed to be serving us in some capacity. Like, I need my thing. I need my reservation. I need my this. And a couple walked in, which is so interesting because sometimes people are watching us and we don't even know.
Yeah.
They ended up in your book. Like, they have no idea. But they walked in, and you're waiting, and they're supposed to have reservations, and their reservations are messed up. Can you talk about how they treated the woman who was working? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. I mean, we had just hiked the Narrows in Zion. And we got back to our hotel. We were exhausted, starving to death. We were like in St. George, Utah, staying, but there wasn't really anything open at the time except for this. Well, we didn't really know the area, so we didn't know it was open or not, but we knew the closest restaurant. So we called in the order. It's like a country club, you know, restaurant. So I go to try to pick up the order, and I'm like standing there for like an hour, like with no one even acknowledging my existence, you know? Mm-hmm. And then this couple comes in, these two couples, really, it was two couples, dressed to the nines. Like, they were just decked out, like hat, like everything, like the ladies are wearing their dresses and shoes and jewelry. Mm-hmm. And the husbands were like about as close to like full on tux as you could get, like decked out. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, man, that's awesome. Like, they've got the woman on their arm, like walking them in proudly, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay. And they come up and they say, two table for four. We had a reservation for our anniversary. It's our anniversary. We got married. I can't remember what they said was the year anniversary, but like, they were like really excited, clearly waiting for this moment for a long time. A lot of work went into it. And the lady just starts panicking. Like, she comes up to the desk and she's talking to them, and she's like, we don't have a table for you. Like, I think you've got the wrong dates. And the guy reaches in his jacket and he pulls out the card with the reservation on mm-hmm. it. And he's like, no, I think it's like the
anniversary.
Date.
So they know what date
yeah.
it is.
Yeah. And so like, she starts to cry. Like, she just feels like, oh my gosh, I've screwed this all up. And he turns to her and says, honey, it's okay. Like, it's okay. You can only play the hand you're dealt. I think that was the exact phrase, and I wrote it down. I'm not looking, but I texted Amanda about this. So I'm like, oh, and he says, you can only play the hand you're dealt, and it's just not in the cards tonight, and that's okay. We'll come back. We'll see you. And she had given them when their reservation was for.
Yeah.
And he turns around, takes his, you know, wife's arm, and they walk out with so much dignity and kindness. And he was so kind to her. And so patient and so understanding and compassionate, right? And encouraging her all along the way to where she was just like, bawling her eyes out, because not from like feeling like she was going to die because she got it wrong, but because they just were pouring out so much encouragement to her. Like, hey man, we all get it wrong. It's okay. Cause they had closed already. Like the kitchen was shut down. They couldn't have. Yeah. It was wild. And I texted my wife and I said, babe, this is what just happened. And that's the kind of people I want to be when we're 80. Yeah. And she texts me back in the best way she could. She said, well, then we better start trying to be that way right now, huh?
What's good?
It's so good, right?
Yeah.
I was like, you're right, babe. Like, that's it, man. I want to practice that kind of kindness and that kind of like encouraging people and know, like, help people feel seen, help people feel known, help people feel like it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And they did that so well.
Yeah. So I love that your book touches on how to deal with the failure of others. And even in these smaller instances, I mean, that's a fairly small instance. And they could have been ornery or said, oh, you know, whatever, you mess this up. This is so important to us. And yet you're giving this framework of how we deal with life when we're disappointed in other people because they've messed up something big or small. You wrote, they walked out with more class than I have ever seen in four human beings.
Yeah.
You said, tears are welling in our eyes. So I love that. Kind of led into the discussion of how can I be a blessing in the midst of either my own failure or someone else's failure, or both, that we can really make a difference with our responses. So there's a lot in this book. You packed a lot in with the ups and downs and your stories and the bullying and the brushes with death and the money failures. I mean, there's a lot in here. It is a fantastic book, like you said, to have out that your kids will, I mean, it's a legacy piece. For your kids and your grandkids, that they'll be able to go back in and see, but they're going to see you at the height of the things that you have accomplished to be able to say, oh, if I mess something up, this is not the end of me.
It's no secret. We love music in our household, and music lessons don't need to be expensive, boring, or stressful. Vogtberg Music Academy offers online lessons that siblings can share in the comfort of your own home. Instead of dragging kids to lessons and paying hundreds of dollars a month for one student, use my code OUTSIDE to get 50% off the first month when your children learns piano, fiddle, guitar, mandolin, or ukulele at VogtbergMusicAcademy.com. For only $15, get weekly lessons and practice principles, 24/7 access to your instructor, live student onboarding calls, and video vaults that provide dozens of extra lessons for students who want to progress faster. With Vogtberg Music Academy, you will never have to nag your children to practice as they work toward earning badges on their success path and performing for community student showcases. Once again, use my code OUTSIDE to give it a try. You get 50% off this month and give your children a lifelong love of music at VogtbergMusicAcademy.com. That's spelled VoetBerg MusicAcademy.com. And use code OUTSIDE when you sign up. Hair thinning is complicated. The problem is, it's actually much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist-recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster-growing hair with less shedding. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for only 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code OUTSIDE. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com is spelled Nutrafol.com. Promo code is OUTSIDE. That's Nutrafol.com. Promo code OUTSIDE.
I thought this part is towards the end where you talked about, I kind of think about this a lot. Sometimes I'm like, is it morbid? Is it really weird? I tend to think about things like, well, I remember this in 5 years. Like, you know, will I remember it in 10 years? Like, do I really have to get all upset? Is it really important? And yours was, if you're going to die next month, if you were going to die next month or next year or tomorrow, and you had this list of questions. It's like a pretty big reframe. Do you tend to think about that often, or did it just happen because then you had that experience at the rodeo? Did it stick with you after that, like forever?
Yeah. I mean, I think every once in a while you have these things happen in your life that feel so big, right? And to be able to reorient your perspective and put it all in the proper perspective. And we'd say things like, don't make a mountain out of a molehill, right? And yeah. That's like such an interesting, I don't know that I've ever really thought about like how big is a molehill, right? But the idea is like, that's, I mean, we were in Ethiopia back in October with our boys, and we went to a zoo and they had moles and they're not big. Yeah, the molehill is pretty small, right? And so when we think about our lives and like, is this going to matter in 5 minutes? I think about just fights that Amanda and I'll have or whatever. And we wake up the next morning and I'm like, what were we fighting about? Like, I know we were fighting, but I don't remember what it was. Like, what started that? I think we can all kind of, you know, identify with that to some extent. Like, you get started on something and then this becomes about this and this becomes about this. And we can allow these things to just become so big. And it's like, well, really, was it really about anything at all? Like, is it, we've blown this thing up. And so the question is, will this matter in 5 years? Will this matter in 50 years? Will this matter in 5 minutes? Will this matter? Like, if I could reorient my perspective to say, what do I want my life to be about? What do I want to be remembered for? What do I, you know, do I want to allow this to change my trajectory or not? Like, do I want this to be a blessing to me or a curse to me? Do I want it to be a blessing to me or a curse to my family? Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you can really just think about it from that perspective, like most of the things that we would be tempted to freak out about really don't matter that much.
It's true. And these questions really bring that to light. Is there someone who needs to know that you love them? Who do you need to forgive? Do you really need to work that many hours at the expense of your family or your mental and emotional health? Would I talk to this person that way if I was going to die? Mm-hmm. Or what if they were going to die? So these are big. You've taken a book and you've really narrowed down to a lot of the essence of life, which is life is filled with a lot of failure and missteps. And it's also short. There's brevity to it. And there are things that are important and not important. And what are we going to be remembered for? You packed a lot of that in, even though the book is about the art of getting it wrong. It really is about how do we really want to live?
Yeah.
In a way that is a legacy to our kids and our family and to the people that are around us. Are you, I see your guitar back there. Are you going to sing us a song?
Yeah. I actually just bought like a hook to like hang it right there. So I was kind of measuring it and forgot to move it out of the way.
You don't talk too much in here about your music.
I do a little bit.
You talked about your screamo band.
Yeah.
And also you're aspiring to be a world famous pastor. That was funny. Where did that come into the story? Because that's a piece to, you don't want to hang your identity on it, but it's definitely a piece that can, like those hobbies and things like that, where you're improving and can bring some solace and some grounding, yeah, some foundation. So when did that all weave into the story?
Yeah, I actually started doing music, and I mean, I've sort of always did music. I mean, I joke that I came out singing instead of crying when I was born. I was, you know,
I've seen it in your videos, where it's like everyone's just talking, and then your response is like a whole thing. Like, yeah, that's great.
I love music. You know, I was the kid on the bus that, you know, I was singing along with the radio and hey, Stephen, who sang this song? And I'd be like, Richard Marx, you know, and well, then let Richard Marx sing the song, you know? Okay. So when I was in high school, I actually started doing music for our youth group and learned to play guitar so that I could do that. And started writing songs because I just kind of thought like, this is my offering to the Lord. Like, I want to write. I grew up in the church and I didn't love church music. And so I thought, I'm going to write songs for God that I'm not ashamed to have my friends hear, you know, that like would maybe be something that they would engage with and in some way. And for my story, like, I feel like I met God through a song. Like, there was a song by a band called Jars of Clay on their first album when I was in high school. It's called Worlds Apart. And I was there in the bedroom of our little duplex in Austin, Texas on a Sunday afternoon and listening to that album. And there's a song called Worlds Apart that says, "Did you really have to die for me? All I am for all you were." And like that just wrecked me out as a kid. And so I'm like, I want to write songs that help people encounter a God who loves them the way that was my story. And so I started doing that. And, you know, it's so easy to start out things and just, you kind of get these alloyed motives along the way, you know? Mm. And it was a really, you know, it comes back to all that trauma that I had as a kid and wanting to prove myself. And it kind of came from this place of like, what was a, I believe, authentically genuine, pure offering to God of song that like, I also was kind of like, but also I could be, you know,
I could prove to everyone how amazing
real famous. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it just was like this constant back and forth and wrestling in my own soul. And then you add to that this sort of comparison where you see other artists who get their song on the radio and before you and get to do this tour before you get to, and, you know, and you're just like, well, why not me? Why not me? And there is a certain sense of like, I look at that and I'm so thankful, but I also, there's space for grieving too. You know, there's space for recognizing the brokenness and the beauty in that whole experience. And so I feel like we came to a pretty cool moment about 3 years ago. I released, well, I guess it was 2 years ago, I released the song. It's called First Love. And it was just kind of like, I know I'm not going to make any money on this, but I'm just going to put it out there. And it's an offering to God. And like, who cares if it gets on playlists or gets on the radio or gets on anything? It's a pure offering. And I love it. And I believe that God enjoys it as well. So here we go. So I released that. And I just felt like a, more than any project I've ever put out, like, I'm like, I felt a sense of peace with that. Mm. You know, and then the next song was called Where Grace Guides Will Go, which is like our sort of motto.
Yes, that's what's on your YouTube videos.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we first, like basically 2018, I made Amanda like a picture of nine birds on a tandem bicycle, because that's like nine people on our family. And it said Where Grace Guides Will Go, because it was sort of our house motto. And so one night, 2 years ago, I guess, I was sitting around a fireplace and I just started writing that in front of her and singing. It's all kind of came together right there. Mm-hmm. And she was like, babe, you got to record that. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to make any money on this, but this is a pure offering to you as my wife. Mm-hmm. That this is what we're going to stand on. You know, like,
well, there's worth doing the things that we love for the sake of doing the things that we love.
Exactly.
And I think that's a big piece.
Yeah.
It's like our hobbies have so dripped over into this piece of how can we monetize it? And I think that's a beautiful part of your story. And your music is out there and people can listen to that. You've got your Stephen Miller music. And I love that. I think that's super inspiring to others. It's like, why can't we just do the things we love because we love them?
Exactly.
Does it have to be because we're aiming for this, that, or whatever metric?
Yeah.
So what a book, Stephen, The Art of Getting It Wrong, Finding Good in the Misadventures of Life. From the outside looking in, and this is a lot how social media is, but you know, to me, you're like the epitome of success, right? It's like, you know, you've got this large family that you're supporting and it's this vibrant family. You've done a whole lot of things. And yet your story includes a lot of failure. And I think a lot of people can draw strength from that because we all have a lot of failure. And you had some really amazing quotes in here. Like Steve Jobs said, success is a lousy teacher. It seduces smart people into thinking they can't lose. And you're just this whole point that failure teaches us resilience. And you did a great job at weaving all of that together. The story is very clear that these things happened. These things were hard. You know, I can't get a job even just because of your own name. You can't get a job because of your name because there's a million Stephen Millers and some of them have been criminals.
Yeah.
And sometimes it gets confusing as to which one is which.
Yes.
I mean, all of these different things that have happened that have led you to the spot that you have the success that people really want, which is a loving and stable family and a spot where you're influencing outward in a very positive way. So people want to find you, the Miller fam, And I'll put all the links, because there's a lot of them, either on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and your website, The Miller Fam, which you've got some old blog posts there. If people want to go back, sometimes that's fun.
Yeah.
And your music. So much there. I so appreciate you coming on. This is incredible, because life is filled with failure and we need to learn the art of getting it wrong. We always end our podcast, Stephen, with the same question. And that question is, what's a favorite memory from your childhood that was outside?
Oh, man. Yeah. So my dad got on a big kick of wanting to rock climb. Actually, that's not going to be my favorite. That's one of my favorites. We would rock climb a lot. But so I love camping now, like so much. I take my boys every year on a big trip. We went to Glacier, Yellowstone, and Grand Tetons last summer. Wow. It was amazing. Just us sleeping in a tent is amazing. And I think that sort of stems back to this one specific memory. My dad and I and my brother, my grandma used to live in this really small town in Oklahoma. And across the street, she kind of lived on a highway and there was a big train track. I just remember all that. There was a big, to me, in my mind, it's a mountain. Like it's a mountain, right? So we hiked over this mountain. It was probably a very small hill in reality. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
It was a molehill.
But I remember us. Yeah, right. It was a molehill. I remember us climbing up over the mountain and coming down to the other side, and there was a stream there. And my dad was like, let's set up camp here. So we did that and built a fire, and like it was awesome. And then it was so cold that night that we like were freezing to death. So we got out of the tent and like built the fire again, and we're like sitting around the fire like at like 2 a.m. and couldn't sleep because it was so cold. And so finally my dad was like, this is stupid, let's walk back home. So we pack up, and because it's dark, like we went the wrong way, I guess, I don't know, but we got lost trying to get back home. And it sort of becomes a blur at that point, because I think we're all delusional. But I remember getting to this place where like there were these, like a pasture where there were all these bulls, and the bulls started kind of running toward us, and we had to like get out of there as quick as we could. It becomes like there's a point where it's like, I don't know where the memory ends and my like imagination takes over, mm-hmm. right? Because it could go a lot of crazy directions right there. But I just remember like us finally like getting home and like being dripping in sweat because it was hot at that point. And like we had to walk through, you know, little creeks and rivers. And so our pants looked all wet and tight. It just felt like, this is what it's all about, you know, just like three guys like out in the woods running from bulls, you know, building fires.
The middle of the night.
Yeah, the middle of the night. Like that's to me like quintessential boyhood, you know?
Well, it's the art of getting it wrong. That's what it is, right? It's like,
yeah,
your dad messed up. He didn't have the warm enough sleeping bags.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the thing. Like that's the failure, yeah. right? Which is like, okay, we didn't quite, I mean, everyone would be like, oh, we didn't quite plan that one right.
Yeah.
But the art of getting it wrong. And then it ended up being this amazing memory for you. Real quick, the YouTube stuff, you can see the quality change over the years. Is it something like,
yeah.
like it's just fits for you? I don't know if I could ever do that. You just like sit in front of the camera and it's like interview style. Like you both love it. Whose idea even was it to go that route? It's such a neat thing.
Yeah.
Like one of them had 10 million views. It was like, how do I get ready in the morning with 7 kids? You know, it's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, I give that credit to Amanda. She really took that early on. We had a lot of, frankly, we were going to start doing it a lot earlier. Like we had talked about kind of doing it in 2018 and just like RV life full time as a family. We were going to call it the Wander Project, you know, and like just travel the world and see it all and do it all. That's very much my like Enneagram 7 kind of personality. Let's go, you know. And then we got Lincoln's brain diagnosis. Our youngest son has a rare brain disease called Moyamoya. And so we were like, well, there goes that idea, you know? And so then like right around the time we're going to start doing his brain surgeries, Amanda has always really documented our lives. for our sake. Like, she just loves watching home videos from when she was a little girl, and, you know, before social media ever existed. And so we had just always done that. And so she was like, I'll just start putting these up on YouTube, and our friends and family can keep up with Lincoln while he's having these brain surgeries, and they can know how to pray and all of that. And it just really, like, took off. Like, we, you know, a year after we adopted the kids, we put up a video kind of like, hey, this is kind of what it was like adopting in China. And, like, that one took off. And then, you know, and then right after that was Lincoln's brain surgery stuff, and that kind of took off. And we'd been doing it. I just remember, like, we had, I think, 35,000 subscribers in 2019. And we were like, if we hit 50,000 subscribers, like, I'll let my kids wax my legs, you know, or whatever. And and I remember, because, like, you have that moment where your kids are waxing your legs, you know, it's horrible. And then, like, we put out that mom morning routine video, and it was like, we had 35,000 subscribers. And then, like, you know, that was like a Wednesday, I think. And then Friday we had 100,000, and then Monday we had 200,000, and then Friday we had 300,000, and then it just kind of, like, took off. And we were like, wait, what? Like, this is a thing? Like, YouTube? Like, what? You know? Aww. So we didn't really know what we were doing when we started. We just were kind of doing it for our friends and family. And so then I was like, well, I guess we better figure this thing out, you know? Yeah. So we started doing it more, and we're so thankful. Like, we just have such a supportive community on there. You know, it's amazing how much people care about our kids and about us and our story. And we hear people who are encouraged to adopt, and they get this, like, encouragement and sense of, like, we can do this from our channel. And so then they go and adopt. And so there's a lot of that. And it's really amazing, because we didn't really expect it or even ask for it. It just kind of happened. And so we thank God for that.
Absolutely. And you can see people are really invested in your story. I am. I was like, ooh, the greenhouse. This is, like, the newest thing. Stephen, I so appreciate it. If you're looking to move to Nashville, Stephen's your guy. And if you're looking for some good music, Stephen's your guy. And if you're looking for how to have a morning routine with seven kids, Stephen and Amanda are your people, the Miller fam. The book is The Art of Getting It Wrong, Finding Good in the Miss. I'm going to try that again. The Art of Getting It Wrong, Finding Good in the Misadventures of Life. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. See ya.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model, so that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun, so check out the No Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.